Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined anybody. It is a Sunday night. The Lakers just finished beating the Phoenix Suns, and I am joined by you guys and your questions. You guys sent in a ton of questions, mostly positive. A few people seem to hate me, but to those of you who send the five-star reviews, they help us keep the lights on here, and so I greatly appreciate that. There were actually some really interesting questions throughout here about the trade deadline coming up, about other options that the Lakers might have after the trade deadline, looking beyond the season, all that good stuff. Somebody even asked me what my favorite kind of wine is. I think that'll be the last question of the show. Nobody wants me to start a show talking about wine, but because we have so many, I think it's smartest just to dive right in and get to all of them, as I promise I always try to do. It's going to be tough. There's some like 15 questions here, but we'll really try to get through all of them. Ready? Here we go. So, first question here comes from Groove. Great job on your show as always. Thanks, man. Saw an article where the Lakers could target Jeremy Lin using KCP and possibly a pick. I'm pretty sure I wrote that article. While I would hesitate to give up one of our more reliable shooters, I'm in favor of a trade given our thinning point guard rotation. What's your thoughts on this? If not Lin, is there maybe another point guard you'd target who you would give and who I would give up for said point guard? So, the more I've thought about it, the more I've kind of come to the realization or understanding also based on some of the stuff I've been able to hear, that I don't think KCP is probably trading KCP is the smartest thing to do or will be the easiest thing to do. Remember, he has that no trade clause. So there was that one random report that said that he and his camp weren't particularly thrilled with the Lakers. That's worth monitoring because that helps. That makes it a little bit easier for them to move him. But I think the Lakers are desperate for shooters. And if you trade KCP for, say, Jeremy Lin in this instance, well, you lose one of the few reliable shooters that the Lakers have. So I think if you trade KCP and you don't get a shooter back, there's a chance that that's going to be a net negative trade. And so because of that, I think Jeremy Lin is going to be a tough target to make just because you now have to really struggle to make the money work unless Atlanta is interested in like both Lance Stephenson and Michael Beasley. And Beasley is tough to trade because of everything he's gone through this year. He's super close with Kevin Durant. So it's going to be tough, man. This is the thing that I keep on coming back to heading into the trade deadline is it's going to be tough for all the teams out there to make trades because of how few sellers there are. And then for the Lakers specifically, because of these edicts that they've put upon themselves, it's going to be really hard to acquire the type of player that can make an impact without giving up a rotation player and without squandering any flexibility that they could have this offseason. It's going to be really tough. Lin makes a lot of sense. I think there are reasons to be concerned about whether or not the Lakers point guards can stay healthy. I find myself freaking out every time Rondo reaches in on anybody because it seems like his hands are a little extra fragile and his right hand especially has been through a lot this year. And then for Lonzo Ball, the Kamenetsky brothers wrote about it. I mentioned it heading into this year, but his injury history isn't something that you can just write off as, oh, stuff happens. He's been injured quite a bit for a second-year player. And it seems like every time his game starts to turn a corner, he gets dinged up in some way, shape, or form. And it kind of makes sense that the Lakers would acquire a point guard to help out just in case some weird stuff happens. Trey Burke is available. Apparently the Lakers had some scouts at a Miami and New York game this past Sunday, yesterday. That makes a lot of sense because Wayne Ellington is playing in that game, and then also Trey Burke is playing in that game, and then, you know, various other pieces that might be available. So that's worth keeping an eye on. If the Lakers make a trade, it would be a smaller one. I think Burke makes a lot of sense because it wouldn't require giving up KCP. I think you can get away with just sending Lance back in that direction and probably some type of conditional pick. But again, Burke is going to be tough to come by also because other teams are out there and need a point guard, and there's just so many more buyers and sellers this year. I'm sure we'll come back to this over the course of the show. Let's get to the next question here. It is from JR61194. Despite everything going on now, writing this after the Lonzo injury, I still think this team is real spooky at full strength. Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, of course they were a 4 or 5 seed when LeBron got hurt. The thing is, though, you can't just guess that or take for granted that the guys are going to get healthy. Some teams just don't get healthy. Remember that Dwight Howard season, the Dwight Mare season? Dwight dealt with injuries all year. Steve Nash broke his shin the very first preseason game, and he was never quite healthy. And then the Lakers had some momentum going, and Kobe snapped his Achilles. Like, sometimes nightmare seasons occur because the team just can't quite get healthy. So I agree that this team has a lot of promise, and I would not want to face this team in the playoffs if they do manage to get healthy. But I do think it makes some sense to kind of shore up a few of these deficiencies that are brought on by health, just in case guys just don't quite get healthy. I think that's a fair way to put that. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I am going to keep answering your questions. All right, so the next question here comes from Devin Jan. Hey, I really love listening every day. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll try. My question is, with Boogie being back and seemingly okay, what would you say are the odds we go after him in free agency? How do you think he would fit alongside LeBron? Appreciate you taking the time. I found myself thinking about this while I watched Boogie play over the first few games of his return. He's shown me enough that I would certainly be interested in him in free agency. He moves pretty well. He's fouling quite a bit, but I think that's because he's trying to catch back up to NBA speed, having missed a year or so of NBA basketball. So I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on, how his fouls per 36 minutes and whether that starts to decrease a little bit as maybe he gets his rhythm back, his wind back, and stuff like that. In terms of the way he fits with LeBron, it's an interesting one. I think it's a good fit overall because he can stretch the floor, and that helps open up the key for LeBron, which then in turn opens up the perimeter for other guys. So offensively, I think it makes a lot of sense. Defensively, we'll see. You know, I think I have more questions. I know I have more questions about his fit defensively with LeBron than offensively. Defensively, look, you need it because LeBron isn't going to literally cannot probably be as focused as you need him to be defensively more often than not. I would want as many just super good athletic defenders around him as possible. Boogie doesn't quite fit that, especially coming off of an Achilles injury, so that'd be a concern. I think a bigger overriding point here, though, is that if the Lakers walk away with DeMarcus Cousins in free agency, it would be, I guess it'd be kind of a win, right? Like, it's getting a kiss on the it's like getting a kiss on the cheek after a first date. Like, technically you did okay, but you know it maybe could have gone a little bit better. I think when it comes to what the Lakers are trying to do this offseason, if they get DeMarcus Cousins, I would feel a little bit disappointed because I just think their aims are set higher. And my aims for them are set higher because of the type of things that Magic and Pelinka and people around the Lakers are saying that they're capable of. Let's go to a couple more questions here. This is about Engaged Lonzo from LA 1056. Can we stop propping up the idea of quote-unquote engaged Lonzo? It makes super fans of his look silly because they have to qualify his performances by engagement level. That's not a good look because being engaged should be a given for most players, especially young players with expectations. Why do people, even you at times, continue to sing the praises of engaged Lonzo, knowing that it makes him look like a largely disinterested player at other times? I think you're overweighing how often he's engaged versus how often he just kind of floats. I think, obviously in a perfect world, in a video game world, that never happens. But, like, there is no such thing as a player who goes out there and is 100% engaged at all times. That player does not exist. And it would be unwise for that player to exist over the course of an 82-game season, knowing that come playoff time, you have to have something left in the tank, right? So it's a knock on a player or a young player especially that they aren't engaged all the time. I actually go the other way there. Young players are more they fall victim to disengagement more often than veteran players. They have not gotten the few years that you do of NBA training and conditioning and nutrition and stuff like that in the way that a veteran does have access to that. And that allows that veteran to be engaged more often. Mentally, you are a more mature person at 26 than you were at 21, right? I was not that much more mature at 26 than 21, but it's worked out okay. And I think when it comes to Lonzo here, the key is to, and I think the Lakers, for the most part, have done a pretty good job of finding ways to keep Lonzo engaged. They had Lonzo room ball. They had him pushing the ball in transition as often as he possibly can. They had him whenever he makes a good play or goes on streaks where he is fully engaged and dominates over the course of that stretch. The other guys on his team, the veterans on his team, like really prop him up and remind him, like, we need that more often. So I think overall, I don't think it's wrong at all that people say engaged Lonzo is a significantly impactful player. That's objectively true. And I also think while I think to a certain extent it's somewhat fair that you would like to see, in a perfect world, you would like to see a player be more engaged more often. It's just not realistic to ask that of a 21-year-old who has a kid for the first time. And this is actually, I forget who it was who was talking about, you know, maybe doing this. But they wanted to look at the number of the numbers that players have when they welcome their first kid into the world in that season, you know, the impact of sleeping less often and all of that. That's something to keep in mind there as well. So I understand why the question comes. I just think the question kind of explains the answer. Next question here. We'll go to one more and then we'll go to the rapid fire round in segment 3. Is Lonzo Ball a glue guy? Hey man, this is from King Wadester. Hey man, love the pod. Thanks. I recently saw a post on Instagram that said Lonzo is surprisingly a glue guy. Plays amazing defense on ball and in helping situations, sets up his teammates, and doesn't seem to care about his stats as long as the team wins. You've stated but when he floats, he's inefficient, and I agree, but when he's engaged, is he the glue guy for the Lakers? Yeah, he's the closest thing. He reminds me of Draymond Green, like if Draymond Green played point guard. He makes most of his impact on defense. When he's hitting his shot, he is one of the, like, legitimately one of the most valuable players in the NBA. And he just, now what separates, I think, Draymond from Lonzo Ball is his willingness to speak up and be loud and having more of that dog attitude that keeps him engaged more often. But again, you're looking at Draymond Green, who is a veteran of I think 6 or 7 years at this point somehow. Time flies when you cover the NBA. But I think that's where Lonzo needs to have his next development in the mental aspect of the game is being able to stay engaged more often. And look, I think it's, like I said a second ago, he's young and all of those things. But I also think we've seen enough here, and we've seen him notice the difference in the impact of the game that he makes when he is engaged versus when he floats. And the first step to addressing a problem is acknowledging that problem exists. And that Lonzo Ball floats at any time is a problem. And I think him being aware of it being a problem makes it more likely that he'll be able to fix it on a more consistent basis moving on over the course of his career. We're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I am going to answer the remaining, lot of questions. We'll be back here in a second. All right, the next question here comes from Loveless Cupid. Hey, Anthony, big fan of the show. Here's my question. I make the mistake of watching super haters like Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman who would trade Lonzo for a six-pack of Gatorade. Look, man, Gatorade's great. Let them tell it. Lonzo is the worst thing ever. I think he's already proven he's not a bust, but alas, they only mentioned stats and not how he makes the team better. What do you think it will take for the haters to finally say Lonzo is not a bust? What minimum stat line would he need for a season as well as other things? Well, Russell Westbrook won an MVP because he averaged a triple-double, right? Like, Harden probably had a better season, but because you didn't have to round up to get to Russell Westbrook's triple-double, Russell Westbrook won it. I think if you're looking for any statistical reasoning with people who don't like Lonzo, and look, I don't listen to Stephen A. Smith. I don't listen to Max Kellerman. I hate First Take. I hate shows like that. I actually get really bored really quickly when it comes to sports talk. Right now, I'm listening to the Harry Potter series of audiobooks as just an escape from listening to sports stuff and being around sports stuff as much as I am. So I can't speak to whether or not I think those guys hate Lonzo. But for people who do dislike Lonzo, I think the big thing for him isn't going to be a statistical thing. It's going to be the team that he plays for has to win. You know, like if the people who believe in Lonzo Ball are going to hold him up as a super impactful player, and his teams continue to lose over the course of his career, I think it's fair for the detractors of Lonzo Ball to look at his supporters and say, well, he really can't be that impactful if his teams have sucked over the course of the entirety of his career, right? So I think for Lonzo looking for a specific stat line, I don't think that you're going to find one that's going to make somebody who doesn't like his game change their minds. But if he wins often enough, as Draymond Green has, and he's the comparison I made in the last segment, like that's when that'll start to shut some of the people who don't believe in him up. Next question here comes from Hey JF Baby. What's up, Ant? Is it just me or is Fee way better on defense than you'd expect him to be? His lateral quickness really pops off the screen. He looks like a real rotation piece after this year. I think what it comes down to, it's a couple things. So with Fee, nobody expects him to be any good on defense. So anytime he plays any kind of decent defense, you're going to say, wow, look at that. I didn't see that coming from him, right? So I think that's always a play here as it pertains to Svi's defense. In terms of him as a defender, what I think, and Luke was like this too, Luke Walton was like this too when he played defense, where you're so unathletic that you don't fall for fakes because you aren't trying to shut anybody down. Like, I play defense like this too. J.J. Redick is one of the better defenders that you probably wouldn't think of J.J. Redick as a defender, but he's actually very good statistically in that respect. And it has a lot to do with just play solid defense. Don't try to shut anybody down. Like, this is where Josh Hart gets into trouble, is he focuses too much on shutting people down, which overextends himself. He picks up stupid hand-checking fouls. He fouls jump shooters way too often, and I think that's because he doesn't recognize that solid defense more often than not suffices. Like, just don't put your team in a worse spot because of your defense. And I think Svi does a really good job of recognizing, I'm not capable of shutting somebody down. So what I'm going to focus on here is just playing solid defense and trying to be as close to a net neutral player on defense as I possibly can. And I think he's done a pretty good job of that as a rookie. And in terms of him being a rotation player, I need to see him shoot better. He's the thing that he's supposed to offer is shooting, and he's not quite at that point quite yet. And he's a rookie, and he's a rookie that was taken later in the draft. So expecting anything out of him this year would have been asinine. But in terms of him moving forward as a player, he needs to shoot better than he's currently shooting. Next question here goes, it's not a question. Enjoy listening to the show. Good insight and some corny jokes sometimes. Yeah, I think that sums it up. though the good insight typically comes from guests. Next question here comes from Big Fridge 21. Hey Anthony, big fan of the pod and all the smart Lakers content. Following you on Twitter, I've noticed you're also a big fan of binge mode Harry Potter. In honor of it coming to an end, I had a question that would combine Harry Potter and the Lakers, because who wouldn't love that? What would your starting Quidditch team look like using the Lakers roster? For me, it would be for the keeper, it would be JaVale, Chaser, Rondo, Lonzo, Ingram, Beater, Chandler, and Hart. Seeker, LeBron. Again, love the pod and really excited to hear the answer to this question. That's a good one. Well, the lineup that you provided is pretty tough to beat. I don't think I can really beat that. I especially like Ingram as the chaser because of his wingspan. He could probably also play keeper. It's funny. You look at the characters who played Quidditch, right? They're all like teenagers, right? They're normal sized human beings. But if you put somebody like JaVale McGee on a broom and you just told him, hey, like stay with the middle hoop and try to and just extend your arms and legs, and that would probably suffice for him playing keeper. So same thing would probably apply for Ingram. LeBron, I would probably change LeBron to being more of a chaser, though. Just like in basketball, LeBron works in any role on a pitch or on a field or on a court or whatever. And I would probably have Rondo or Lonzo as the seeker, just because they're a little smaller, a little faster. So those guys probably stick out to me there. But beyond that, I can't really argue with that. Great question. And shouts to all the Harry Potter fans out there. Harry Potter legitimately changed my life. I guess I'll tell this quick story. My grandma, who has since passed this past year, I was struggling in English, and I was told that I'm never going to be good at English. I'm never going to be a good writer. I'm never going to be able to speak. I'm kind of a lost cause in this respect. And really, what it would have boiled down to is I just wasn't interested at all in the reading content that we had. And my grandma, it was an English teacher when she was younger, and she found these Harry Potter books. She bought me the first, second, and I believe third book, and I started reading those. And it unlocked a completely different world to me. I enjoyed reading. I found that I was actually pretty good at writing. I found that I was okay. I was fairly clever, and so because my grandma gave me those books way back when I think I was in junior high school or maybe high school, because she gave me those books, I thought about careers that I probably never would have thought of previously. And eventually I was an English major, and eventually I went into writing and blogging about the Lakers, and now I have a career as a Lakers podcast hosts and bloggers. So shouts to grandma and never let anybody tell you you're not good at anything. They're all idiots. Believe in yourself. Next question here comes from Vujicic fan. Oh, Harrison, nice of you to leave me a question. Love the show, man. Listen during my lunch break every day. Enjoy your lunch, bud. What are your thoughts on the All-Star teams? They seem about right to me, but would love to see Jokic on the West team. They have no center, but who would you kick off? Not trying to troll because I love the Lakers, but did LeBron deserve it? Yes, his career says of course, but he's been out for too long. I think there's something to that, but I don't know. It's a game meant for entertainment, and I just think a game with LeBron James in it is going to be more fun than a game with Nikola Jokic in it. Also, I think – so I remember when Kobe was making All-Star teams and people were hot and bothered about it because he was dominating in fan votes. And, like, to a certain extent, I do think that some players should be rewarded for having a historically incredible career. And if that means that, like, Kobe makes an extra All-Star game, but, like, Joe Johnson doesn't make one, I don't know. I think I'd rather have Kobe in that game. Like, you look back and you look at those games, and I've never thought to myself, like, oh, man, it's a really good thing, you know, Damon Stoudemire made an All-Star game at one point in his career, right? Like, I look back and I say, like, okay, give me as many great players on the court at the same time, and that's going to make for the most entertaining game. I think Nikola Jokic is good. I know he's going to make the All-Star team for one of these teams. He's probably going to be picked later than he should be, but that, I think, has to do with the other centers who would be picked ahead of him. Like, you're not going to pick a backup center third overall, you know, but I do think that Jokic is having an incredible season. He deserves MVP praise, and he's getting it. Maybe not enough. I don't think he's getting enough MVP talk, but that you're getting any MVP talk in a season where Giannis is insane, James Harden has scored like 3,000 points in the last 2 months. LeBron James exists. Steph Curry exists still. Kevin Durant exists still. So to be kind of in that group as a goofy, unathletic, super skilled, and super smart big man in a city like Denver, like, it just shows how special a season Jokic and the Denver Nuggets are having. Next question here comes from... Yeah, assess the threat. We have so many expiring one-year deals on our roster now. Who do you and Pete think we should focus on retaining, trading, and dropping over the summer? I think Rondo and JaVale, if he gets back to how he's playing to start the year, might be the ones who we go after the hardest. I think Rondo makes a lot of sense. The front office seems to really, really like Rondo. And I do think he's a great presence for, say, Lonzo, right? So long as Lonzo is around, I think it makes a lot of sense to have Rondo around. But beyond that, like, I guess JaVale makes some sense, though I think he's probably going to be looking to make a little bit more money than the Lakers are going to be willing to offer him this year. He's making league minimum right now, which obviously isn't bad money, but I think he probably feels like he could be making a little bit more. And you know, if the Lakers acquire Anthony Davis, then I don't know if there's a big enough role there for JaVale McGee. In terms of other guys around the roster I like Michael Beasley. I really like his game, and it fits really well with Anthony Davis's. I think KCP, if the Lakers can't acquire more shooting because of the clutch thing, I'm sure that'll be an option. But, you know, first and foremost, their priorities are filling out their roster with superstars and figuring out everything else from there. Next question comes from Lakers should re-sign Huertas. Hey, Anthony, I'm writing this after the Lakers lost to the T-Wolves, during which they somehow made Andrew Wiggins look like an all-star. The Lakers are now 1.5 games behind the Clippers for the number 8 seed. I believe the Clippers are the only team that could potentially fall out of the current playoff picture. But they have the 5th easiest remaining strength of schedule, while the Lakers have the 4th toughest. I believe that's up to 3rd now. With that in mind, how confident are you that the Lakers make the playoffs, scale of 1 to 10? It all depends on how quickly LeBron James comes back, right? Like, if LeBron James is out, say, another week, then I really don't think the Lakers make the playoffs. I don't think they're capable of staying afloat, given how tough their schedule is about to get. If he returns for Tuesday's game against Philly and the Lakers are able to get some rhythm going again and Lonzo Ball doesn't miss more time than the 4 to 6 week window that they have him, time frame that they have him returning, then okay, yeah, I think the Lakers are a better team than the Clippers and will win more games than the Clippers do to end the year. You know, beyond that, there aren't very many teams in the West, I agree, that I think are going to fall. So the Lakers really do have their work cut out for them. The playoff chase is going to be insane. And I would maybe expect to get a little bit of help from the league if it looks like LeBron is going to miss the playoffs. Like, I think that's something to keep in mind as well. This is Anthony Davis before the trade deadline. In today's NBA, this is from Scott and Yor Belinda. Right up the street. In today's NBA environment, there's a great possibility that the Pelicans will wise up and want to get the most for Anthony Davis right now. Under most circumstances, I would think the Lakers have the best offer to make, considering the handcuffs on the Celtics with the Supermax rule. However, if the Celtics were to include Kyrie Irving in a deal for Anthony Davis, wouldn't that relieve their problem of having two Supermax players? A month ago, I would not have imagined this scenario, but I see the issues in the locker room with the Celtics right now involving Kyrie, and I think Danny Ainge may look at things differently now. Keep up the good work. I don't see that the Celtics offering Kyrie in a trade right now, but like, so here's the thing. For the Pelicans, why would you make Anthony Davis available right now when the pool of potential teams that could drive up the asking price for Anthony Davis is not at its as big as it's going to get? Like, it's going to get bigger. And it's going to get bigger in a big way because it's the Celtics who can get involved, and they have a crazy amount of assets that would be tough for just about any team to top. The other thing, too, is that you have teams out there that are all vying for the playoffs, and I think they're going to be more focused on making those playoffs or getting ready for those playoffs than, say, putting a trade together for Anthony Davis mid-season, right? And so that's going to alter the types of offers that are made if Anthony Davis becomes available. What the Lakers have to hope for, best case scenario for the Lakers, is that Anthony Davis goes to the Pelicans as they fall further and further out of the playoff picture, and he says, I want you guys to trade me, and I want you guys to trade me to the Lakers. And Rich Paul and the rest of Anthony Davis's camp go out there and they tell every single team, do not trade for our guy. He will not re-sign there. Period. Point blank. That's it. That's the only way that I think the Lakers wind up with Anthony Davis now versus this upcoming summer, because it doesn't make sense for the Pelicans to go out there and trade a guy, one, before they have to, right? Like, they can't even offer him the Supermax. Like, I would want to call a guy's bluff, right? Like, hey, you can be making $40 million a year to just play basketball. And by just play basketball, I mean you can also add to that with whatever money that you make off of the court, right? So I would want to see him push that check away, push that contract away before I actually make a decision that would alter the next decades plus of my franchise's future. So I think, you know, we'll see. And even in that scenario of Davis saying that he wants to be a Laker and he will not re-sign anywhere other than with the Lakers, even in that scenario, we've seen that not necessarily work or not work to the Lakers in the Lakers' best interest, right? Like, Paul George is still a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. We'll see how things turn out with Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, right? So we'll see how these things go. But for right now, I think the Lakers have to be focused on small tweaks to the roster to get into the playoffs, make as much noise as they possibly can in the playoffs, and they kind of sort of have to hope that the Pelicans fall completely out of the playoff picture, and Davis becomes so frustrated that he demands out. Next question here comes from ZZABNA. Zabna. Hey, Anthony, love the show. Love Pete analysis of the Lakers as well. Thanks. Is Lonzo the guy Magic really wants to keep? Seems like the past two trade deadlines, negative reports of Lonzo surfaced. Is this Magic's doing to scare teams away? Thanks. I don't think Magic is in the business of lowering one of his most valuable assets value just so that he sticks around longer. I don't think that's going on. Do I think Magic really likes Lonzo? Yeah. Do I also think that Magic might be a little frustrated with how Lonzo's career has gone while D'Angelo Russell is doing the things that he's doing in Brooklyn? Probably. I sure as hell hope so, right? So I think all of these things can be true at the same time, and they're probably all going on at the same time. I just don't think that Magic Johnson is out there leaking reports and questions of Lonzo's work ethic and health and whatever other questions are out there about the guy. I don't think it's Magic that's behind those. Next question here comes from McNuggets 2483. Between Lonzo and Ingram, who has the most value, most team value, and who has the most trade value? I think both the answers to the answer to both those questions is Lonzo. Ingram is tough to evaluate because he's so very obviously good enough to maybe talk yourself into him. But we said the same thing about Jeff Green for like years, right? There are still teams that believe Jeff Green. Charles Barkley, just like last season, said that Jeff Green has the potential to be a perennial all-star. You know, Jeff Green's like 30 plus, right? And so you look at Lonzo Ball's career, Ingram's career, there's enough there to look at and say, man, 6'8", 6'9", crazy wingspan, ball handling abilities, can get to the rim, finishes pretty well around the rim, has added a nice little short range jumper to his game. He works, by all accounts, he works super hard. So there's enough to like look and convince yourself that, yeah, we could trade for this guy and really focus on his development, and he could be legitimately valuable. I just think it's more obvious the ways that Lonzo Ball helps the team, and Lonzo has been better at helping the team in those ways than Brandon Ingram has been over the course of those two guys' careers. Last basketball question. Should the Lakers sign Meta when they meet the Rockets next to remind Harden what a real foul is? This is the thing. I don't want this to sound like I am rooting for guys to get hurt. People who do that are the worst. But I'm surprised that no NBA players just hauled off and really smacked James Harden. Like, Harden must be a really nice guy, is my guess. And he must be really respected to kind of take advantage of the rules and play using the antics that he does. And he's never really been, other than Meta, he doesn't really get hit hard in the way that you would probably anticipate. People would just get frustrated and haul off and punch a guy, right? Like, those things, I'm surprised that hasn't really happened yet. I guess Ingram did it. But Ingram hasn't been around the NBA as long, and for the most part, like, you know, that it's weird to me that that's never happened. Like, there's a Dave Cowens story, and there are tons of stories like this anyways, but Cowens got called for like two or three ticky-tack fouls in a row. This is an old Boston Celtic. This is from Bill Simmons' book. Cowens got called for a couple ticky-tack fouls, and then for his fourth foul, like, just straight decked a dude. Walked over to the referee, said, "That's a bleeping foul," and walked off the court. He knew he'd been ejected. And, you know, I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet with Harden. It surprises me. And, you know, I'm not saying I hope it does. I'm just saying I'm surprised it hasn't. Last question here. What are your favorite wines? So I'm a Pinot Noir guy, first and foremost. I just think it's a nice light red. So it has the taste of a red, but it's not super duper heavy. I just think, and you know, I get a lot of this from Sideways, the movie, which is crazy because, like, Sideways, when it came out, legitimately impacted wine sales. Like, Merlots, nobody was buying Merlots for like years. Merlots aren't terrible wines. They're not my favorite, but they aren't terrible wines. But that movie Sideways with Paul Giamatti and I think it's like Thomas Hayden Church or something like that. That movie comes out. Giamatti has that great speech about Pinots and why he likes Pinots, and I agree with a lot of what he said there, and like actually in terms of the botany of wine. And so I really like Pinots, which what I prefer to do, and not everybody prefers to do this, but I like to if I'm having a nice Pinot Noir with like a steak dinner, what I'll do is I'll put the Pinot into the fridge and cool it down so that it's just colder than room temperature. Not cold. I don't want to see, you know, condensation around the bottle. That means you overcooled it, right? And that impacts the flavor. But if it's just slightly cooled, just slightly colder than the surrounding environment, it makes it even more refreshing. And when you're eating a hearty steak or something like that, having something to kind of refresh your palate just makes a lot of sense. So that's my favorite wine. I like champagnes. I like mimosas. Those are really good. It's hard to go wrong with mimosas. But I had my wife and I, for one of our anniversaries recently, we went to a wine bar in LA, in like West Hollywood kind of area, and which is not LA, sorry. But we went out there, and the bartender, I asked him, "Hey, my wife really likes champagne. I really like Pinot. Do you have something that maybe we can split?" And he goes, "Well, we have a Pinot Noir champagne." And I was floored. And we had it, and it was incredible. I haven't been able to find it since. And it's really pissed me off. But it's really good. If you can ever find it, try it. Check out a Pinot Noir champagne. And if you find it, enjoy it, man, because those are really good. Maybe buy a couple bottles of it. That's really good as well. I've tried, and maybe this upcoming year I'll try to get a little bit more into whites, just because you can have those like sitting around the pool. I don't think it's going to happen, quite frankly. But you know, some rosés are okay in that type of a setting. But I'm mostly a reds kind of guy. I like Syrah a lot, and Petite Syrahs. Those are really good. Some cabs are okay. I just think cabs are pretty run of the mill. So I just think when you get a good Pinot Noir, it's more special than any wine that you're going to have, in my opinion. Just my opinion, though. Let me know what you guys think. Hit me up on Twitter at AnthonyIrwinLA. Send me emails if you guys want. All that stuff is in my Twitter profile. And as always, if you want anything covered in the show, send it in the form of a 5-star review, and I guarantee you I will get to it. I somehow got to all of those questions today. So it's a longer show, and my voice is going, I'm losing my voice, but I hope you enjoyed it. So have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.